Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome live to Connecting the Dots with Casey Tuckness. And I appreciate everybody tuning in tonight. We've got a very, very, very special guest that I'm super excited about. And his name is Dave, and Dave is from Texas. And he's got an amazing, amazing story to share with you. Dave, do I have you on live? Dave, do I have you there? Okay, hold on just one second. Let me get to the switchboard. Dave, are you online? I show that you're in the switchboard. Angela, do I have Angie, do I have you online?
Yes, I'm here.
So I show both of you in the call log, but for some reason, I don't know why Dave is not in right now, but that's fine. So why don't we start the show? I would like to explain to the listeners how this week has just absolutely unfolded for me. I mean, researching and looking for things that God has absolutely put in my path and to help people. And it started out Monday morning with me, with the judge in my township in Montgomery County, Texas, reaching out to me and offering to be an expert witness and to negotiate my settlement with Bank of America for me. He has been a county judge for 20 years, and I feel like if we have more of these judges that will come forth knowing that the wrongdoing is so wrong, and this judge, in my eyes and in my heart, is a hero, an absolute hero. I've had multiple conversations with Michael Winston, who is the whistleblower from Bank of America, formerly known as Countrywide. And Michael has got an amazing story as well, and he will be on the show within a few weeks. But tonight we're going to interview Dave, and like I said, Dave is from Texas, and Dave and I have very parallel stories, all about one law firm, Barrett Daffin, which is located in Addison, Texas. And Dave already has the case already taken to the Supreme Court, which is an absolute huge deal. So, Dave, have you made it on yet? I show him live on the computer screen, and so I can't figure out why, unless his phone's muted or something. So this week alone, my father and I, like I said, we met with the county judge. We met with somebody that was with the county clerk's office for 20 years in my county. And then all of a sudden, it's like God brings these stories to me in these situations where it's just like, oh, my gosh, you know, I may not have the financial resources, but I have the knowledge behind these stories. And you take the paperwork, and there's always a paper trail. And so, Angie, what I would like to thank you for texting, Angie. So you said that Dave is muted.
I heard him. He said he was on mute.
He said he's on mute, and then
It went out. So I don't know if we lost him or what happened.
Dave, are you there? Okay, so I show that he's live. So hang on. Just Angie, why don't you talk about our situation today? Would you like to tell your story? Because we met through Dave.
Sure. Okay, I don't even know where to start because you put me right in the show at the last second. So you have me a little stage fright.
Nope.
Okay, I started a mortgage. Go ahead.
I see Dave as Dave got disconnected.
Now I'm on the telephone. I disconnected off the computer screen.
Oh, thank God.
There you are, Jade. I'm like, no, I show him active. I show him active.
Now,
so I put Angie on the spot for just a second. No worries. No worries at all. So, Angie, we will get to you, and don't be stage fright. Just know that by sharing your story, you're not the only one. I've seen your story. I've heard your story 1,000 times. And so when we met today, it was no surprise to me what we found. So, Dave, Angie's the one that you know, reached out to me about, saying the lady, you know, there's a lady in Conroe, Texas that needs help. And so I met with her today on your behalf. And,
we try to help out
Louisiana,
Texas.
Do what?
Even people in Louisiana, we try and help out the Louisiana people, too.
We help out everybody across the nation. It doesn't matter where you're at. It's like we all have something in common. Every single, human in America, we all have something in common, and that's mortgage fraud. I think you would agree to that, Dave.
Mortgage fraud, that's what I've been fighting since 2012, actually.
So tell us your story.
I made my living a long time building buildings, being an engineer, totally ignorant of law, other than now and then we'd build a building or a stadium or a football field or something, and some lawyers would call me and get me deposed and see if the plumbers ought to make a little more money or the iron workers ought to work a little harder. So that was my extent of legal experience before
right.
I went toward the very end of paying off my mortgage. I asked my mortgage company, hey, how much do I owe on my house? My computer says I owe about $3,800. What do y'all got? And they didn't respond to me for a long time. It was November, then December. I was waiting for a tax check to come since I just retired. And then suddenly I get a notice on my door, they're going to sell my house down at the county steps. So I said, hold on. We're confused here. And I figured I would talk to those people up in New Jersey and eventually find a rational person up there. And they'd apologize for making the mistake. And, you know, the sheriff wouldn't run me out of my own house. And that never happened. Then I got familiar with the legal system in America. And in Texas, where I live, Texas is one of the better states because we've got a Texas Constitution. And it's also one of the worst states because once they decide to evict you out of your house, the average time it takes in Texas is about 28 days. And we got a company up in Dallas, Texas, that Casey just mentioned, Baffert, Burt, Daffin, Frappier, Turner, and Engels.
No, Barrett, Daffin, Frapper, Turner, and Engels.
Daffin, Burt is dead now, but Burt was a patent holder. But anyway, they do nothing but sell houses. We got about 300 counties in Texas. The first Tuesday of the month, they're selling 5 or 6 houses in every county in Texas. Whoever wants to buy another house. This is all they do. And each time they type a little piece of paper, they charge the vendor $375 or $295, whatever the usual customary and reasonable fee is, whatever their computer system says, that's what they charge people. They run a thriving business up there. They make it their policy not to talk to the people who they're selling their houses for. They say, you'll have to talk to your people in New Jersey. We're not allowed to talk to you. We're a trustee for both parties, but we don't talk to one of our trustees. We only talk to the trustees up in New Jersey or New York or San Francisco, Las Vegas, whoever they're working for.
Right.
So I started writing them some humorous letters, some requests for information. I got familiar with the mortgage structure and never met that rational people. So the night before they were going to sell my house on a Monday afternoon, I decided to go bankrupt. And that's
right.
What people do. That's what people do to stop a foreclosure sale. You fax to the home office up in Dallas and New Jersey, everybody related. You just fax
right.
in the your bankruptcy case number, and everybody goes away. Federal trustee handles it. So the federal trustee monitored my last six payments to my mortgage company, and I ended up paying my 15-year mortgage in 11 years and 8 months and became unbankrupt. Now, that process cost me about $2,500. It cost me the first lawyer I hired charged me $1,000, used up $400 before I fired her. I hired another lawyer to go bankrupt. He went bankrupt for $2,500, but then he made an out-of-scope phone call over to Mississippi to an employer I had, and he charged me $450 for the phone call, so I had to fire him. Since then, I've been pro se. I've been managing my own legal case, and I'm asking naturally for the money back that I incurred in defending my house in a fraudulent foreclosure. There's my company, PHH, my old company. They've already stated that they intend to go out of business. But they used to hold about 3% of the mortgages in the United States and foreclose 600 houses per day in the United States. That's Saturday, Sunday. That's 30 days a month, 600 houses, 18,000 properties a month they would take into their possession. These people never even go in the state where they own their house. Somebody comes and puts a sign in the front yard. The real estate people come around. People come around and take the air conditioners as soon as the sign goes in the front yard. The copper is worth about $20 down at the scrap yard. Then pretty soon somebody bashes in the front door and they take the water faucets and the toilets. Those are easily saleable items. And 5 or 6 years later, if the house doesn't sell for a suitable amount of money, then they just bulldoze it, build another one, and they tell the federal government, hey, we repossessed a house from somebody down there in Burnett County. It was, we thought we were going to sell it for $300,000, but people stole all the stuff. It was only worth $150 when we sold it. So federal government, would you give us the $298,000 and make us whole again? Because
where does that money come from? The taxpayer.
The government writes them a check.
speaking of all of this, because what you're describing to me is what we have in 99 Homes. Have you ever seen 99 Homes?
99 Homes.
Now, the movie.
The 99 Homes is in my jury familiarization process. I advocate for people to get in front of a jury. I'd like
to show
my jury just to familiarize them with the issues. 99 Homes, then The Big Short, and then Inside Job. If you show those three movies to your jury when you get in front of a jury, your jury will take a day, have lunch in between time, and your jury will familiarize themselves with the issues. All of my dealings with the court, I've never been able to get in front of a jury, and that is, in fact, the question that I have before the United States Supreme Court at this moment. It is the question before the court is, in accordance with Rule 38, where any person in a federal court arguing about more than $20 has an inalienable right to a trial by jury, either party.
Absolutely.
This is a motion that cannot be opposed and is merely reported by the clerk. So I naturally desire to have a jury and tell people that my house was not really a foreclosure. People were just making an error in trying to steal it.
Absolutely.
But we never got that far. And we kept we were 2 years in district court, and I was trying to build a class defense. As a pro se litigant, you can't negotiate a class, but if the judge decides that your story has some class relations, the judge can appoint an attorney from his stable, and he can develop your class. Now, I had Judge Lee Eagle down there, just by luck of the draw in Western Texas, and anybody who gets before a judge, read all his opinions. That's the first thing I did when my case got assigned to him. we have Google today to do all your legal research if you can't afford it.
Absolutely.
Legal. But you can read all their opinions. And I found that Judge Yeakel was a interesting judge. And even some judges are getting kind of irate about people coming into their courtroom lying, cheating, thieving, and stealing, and walking out with money. So my judge was one of those judges. He was trying to help me out. Every time the defendants made a motion for summary judgment, the judge would say, well, that's an interesting motion here, but I think this is an interesting argument, and I'd like to hear a response in this particular matter.
Right.
So over the two years we were in court, I accumulated about 1,290 pages of motions, replies, responses, research. The complaints are limited to 15,000 words, so I try and express myself in 10,000 words or less, not to push the limit.
I didn't know, Dave,
no.
Until I filed mine week before last, and I was so proud of it. And I didn't realize, but I was told by Bank of America's attorneys that I didn't have a limit. They have a limit, so they called me, I spoke with them yesterday, asking if they were ready to, you know, let's sit down, let's negotiate, because they requested from me a settlement demand letter. And I got I provided the settlement demand letter last Friday, and then I followed up Monday of this week, the same day that I met with the judge in my county that has followed my case for 9 years and has seen the 14. Listen, if I were a deadbeat and I weren't paying my mortgage, that is one thing. But I was making six figures a year working for NBC in the media, you know, and it doesn't matter, like, my lifestyle. I didn't have whenever I paid off my credit card debt after my divorce 11 years ago, I never had a credit card after that because I didn't, like, if I couldn't pay cash, I didn't need it. I wasn't living over my means. And they sent me a FedEx package. Do what?
Your case is in Texas East.
No, mine's in South. Mine's in Houston.
Texas South? Oh, in Houston,
yes,
Texas
sir.
South. So it's one of the 372 cases older than 3 years.
Uh-huh.
I'm looking at the stats on the screen right now.
Okay.
In Texas West, I'm one of the 70 cases that's older than 3 years.
Okay.
And when I look at the Supreme Court calendar, I don't see a case that's less than 5 years old by the time
it gets
to the Supreme Court.
Except for yours.
Mine is about
Except
five and a half.
Except for yours.
I'm the newest case in the Supreme Court. There's a lot of people
and
standing
I
in line.
I cannot wait for that day that we're flying out to Washington, D.C. to go do that.
We'll have a half hour to argue with these people. They'll have a half hour. I'll have a half hour. If the judges
I
ask
will be right by your side.
More than a half an hour.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, with us both having Barrett Daffin, I mean, they know me very well around there. At Barrett Daffin, it's unbelievable the things that they do. Dave, did I share with you that my statute of limitations, because the statute of limitations is 4 years, so, and I know all this law because my mother owned a collection agency. My parents have worked all of their life and done the right thing, you know, and my mom my parents owned a collection agency. My father was in the distribution business. But my mother owned a collection agency, and I would do skip tracing for her when I was 13, 14, 15 years old. And then I worked for GMAC and then went to Ford Consumer Finance and did mortgages and, you know, would call my mom and dad and go, hey, I just won the Triple Crown. So proud of it because I was going to get a $500 bonus for foreclosing on somebody's house. I was 18 years old making $50,000.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was doing to people.
You had those 15,000 pages of Respatila in your back pocket or on a CD handy.
Yes,
sir. You can log down to page 1,039, paragraph K, paragraph 2, subparagraph G, and be right within your domains.
You got it. You absolutely have it.
It's impossible to comply with these laws. There's one law. I trace everything back to the Ten Commandments. The Decalogue is what the olden people used to call it. And I just
right.
go with thou shalt not steal. And that's
absolutely right
for me. And then I build on top of thou shalt not steal. And then with the courts, well, I based my case on FERIA 1989, the Financial Institution Reform Regulation and Enforcement Act of 1989, that sourced in Texas when we had the savings and loans, when Bill Black actually put a few people in jail. And our governor from Texas went to jail back in those days for running a savings and loan. You might have been repoing some houses from him when you were 18 years old.
Who was that?
So anyway,
I
based my case on that.
It was Ann Richards in 89?
Yeah, I noticed that those cases were successful. But the United States Attorney General prosecutes those cases. And in my case, I act on behalf of the United States Attorney General, Eric Holder in District Court, Loretta Lynch by the time we were in appeals court, and now I'm acting for Jeff Sessions. I keep Jeff Sessions fully informed, and he has the right to intervene at any point. Now, if I should, if the Supreme Court should reverse my appeal or make an award or write a letter, then that $84 million that I'm claiming, I'll get 15% of that amount of money, or a maximum of $1.6 million, or whatever a sufficient and fair amount may be, as decided by the judges. A couple hundred dollars might be sufficient for a peasant. And then we'll all go about our business. But out of the many errors that we made a lot of errors in district court. There's two different philosophies when you're running an appeal. One appeal is appeal on every single thing that there is. And then if you lose appeals number 1, 2, 5, 7, and 9, but win appeal 8, then you've won your appeal and you get reversed. And my feeling is to appeal your strongest case, your strongest suit. So I appealed on the thievery and the Barrett Burt Daffin gives me some easy pickings because they do everything by computer. No human has a personal knowledge. In fact, Casey, they still have a dead person signing letters for Casey. He's still alive on the computer, but they haven't noticed that he died 9 years.
He died
ago.
In 1990.
He still receives mail up there in Dallas.
In Sonsport. You're not going to believe what I. Dave, wait till you hear this.
This
is what I uncovered yesterday. So yesterday, God leads me to, I had literally just met this guy the day before, because you know I allowed a homeless guy that is doing amazing things with people with kids with abilities, and I find out that he was homeless. And I'm like, you know what? I don't stay in my house because I'm just ready for the whole thing to be over. But somebody has to be there because otherwise, what are they going to say? It's going to be abandoned or whatever. So I let it rent free. You know, I'm not collecting anything, nothing. Because you know what? I just need a body there. I need somebody to stay there and just watch out on things so we can get this thing settled. Well, his friend reached out to me night before last, and he said, hey, it was great to meet you today. Because I just met him, you know, 3 minutes worth. He said, I see that you do stuff against Bank of America, that you stand up to them. And he said, I've got questions for you. Well, this guy worked for Edward Jones, and he's you know, like a finance guy. And I'm like, all right, you know, what questions do you have? So I met him yesterday morning at Starbucks in my local Kroger grocery store, met him for like maybe 20 minutes. And he's sitting across from me, and I'm letting him, you know, I didn't have time to put him in my itinerary for the week, but God makes your itinerary, you know, and it's just like you've just got to believe in the Lord and say, okay, you know, what are you going to have in store for me today? And so I asked him, I said, so what would you like to know? You know, and he said, well, I just want to know, like, how did you overcome these foreclosures and how did you get, like, how did you get into being, you know, in foreclosure? And I said, well, I got scammed into being in foreclosure because they offered me, they told me I was pre-qualified, sent a FedEx letter to my house, told me April Fool's Day 2009, congratulations, you're pre-qualified, your next payment's not due for 60 days, your payment's going to be lowered, da-da-da-da-da. And he was like, okay, and he's listening to me. And he just has tears in his eyes. And I said, tell me your story. And he said, well, he said, I just got out of the military. I said, well, I noticed that your car had, you know, DV plates, license plates, which is disabled veteran. And he said, yeah, how, you know, you're aware of things. And I said, no, absolutely I'm aware. But, I mean, so you're a disabled vet. And he goes, yes. I said, well, which, you know, service were you in? He said, I was in the Marines. And I said, okay, how long did you serve? And he's like, 13 years until I got hurt. And then they sent me home. And I said, okay, you know, I'm so sorry, but thank you for your service and this, that, and another. And he just had tears in his eyes, and he's like, well, listen, I'm asking for a family member, he said, on what and if there's anything that we can do to stop this. And I said, well, I need to know a timeline. I need to know, you know, when, where, what, why, how, who, and so anyway, he said, well, it's Bank of America, and, you know, and then after about 5 minutes of him telling me, like, the information, I'm like, look, I need to see documents, I need to see this, I need to see that, and he looked up at me with tears in his eyes, and he's like, it's my dad, it's my dad, it's my parents, and immediately, I'm just like, you know what? I've got plans, pre-plans to go and have lunch with the former. He was he worked for Montgomery County Clerk's office for 20 years, and has just been my wingman and my right hand on all of my knowledge behind the scenes. And so I had lunch plans with he and my father, and so I couldn't, like, I had to go do that. But I said, you know what? I can be done with that by 12:30. I'm in Conroe. I can meet you, you know, meet your father, you know, by 1:15. I met his father by 1:15. His father was a pastor. His father was elderly. His father had been foreclosed on two separate houses, two separate times in the past 5 years. And the mother has had three massive heart attacks just in the past couple of months. This scam artist came and started taking money from them, $500 a month cash, and I have the receipts. I've sent everything over to KTRK, to the ABC affiliate here, to run a story on this situation, because we've got to start getting media coverage. We've got to start – this has got to stop. It's out of control, you know, and it's just so sad to hear every single story. And then, you know, I met with, you know, Angie, and we'll leave her last name confidential, but met with Angie that you reached out to me a couple of weeks ago, Dave, and said, hey, there's somebody in Conroe that needs your help. And then, you know, I followed up with you within a couple of days, and I'm like, did your friend want to talk to me, you know? And she's, you know, we went back and forth, but I was just like, okay, you know, whatever. If she needs me, let her know I'm here for her. So we spoke night before last, and she had to work yesterday, so we were going to meet today. We met at 1 o'clock today, and she brought all of her documents. And Dave, if you could have seen how much fraud has gone on in her case.
It's every paragraph you have a fraudulent act. It's the most profitable business in America. It's a fraudulent act on every page.
We literally have a...
Go ahead, Angie.
I said we literally have a shopping cart full.
Literally. You'll see the picture on Facebook after a while. Literally. It was classic. It was classic. But it was, Dave, it was so overwhelming. It was just like, I said, okay, first I get out my notepad because, as my father has taught me, Casey, write everything down. You've got to write it down, write it down, write it down. So I get my notepad, get my pen, and I'm just like, okay, I need timelines. When did you buy the house? In 2004, okay? So 2004, she has had four children raised in that home.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only home that her children, her four kids, and her husband of 20 years, has known. This is their home. And Dave, when you see how many times it switched hands and how many different account numbers, I'm like, look at this account number. This doesn't match this. Look at this. It was just unbelievable what we found. And what we uncovered.
Yep.
And I'm like, listen, were you a part of the independent foreclosure review? Because those people told us, this was back in 2012, and they paid us in April of 2013. And that's when the contractors were coming in and out of my house, is in 2013. And they said the independent foreclosure review is basically, I'm like, were you a part of that? She's like, no, not that I'm aware of. Well, guess what? 20, 30 minutes later when we were still opening up envelopes, right, Angie? She's like, Casey, look at this. And I'm like, oh, what does that say? Independent foreclosure review? And she's like, I can't believe this. And I'm like, so there's just so much. So, Dave, let's talk about the jury system. Let's kind of switch gears for a minute. And my father served on the grand jury, and absolutely he loved it. And my father is as pure and amazing and just does the right thing.
I've been on a few juries over the years. I've never been on a grand jury. I now have a notice on Facebook that I'm willing to meet grand jury in Texas or an adjacent state, and I will tell that grand jury how to go about addressing the criminal activity in their own county, because all you've got to do is go to the county clerk's office and read the foreclosure bulletin board, and out of those 30 or 40 notices you'll see stuck up there, there'll be five or six criminal activities right in front of you, in front of any grand jury. I have a standing offer, no charge. I'm not an attorney, and I don't practice law, and I don't accept money. The most important thing in my life, I accept no money. And that allows me to run a website and talk to people about their problems and to meet judges and jurors, senators, presidents. I haven't gone on a plane with Donald yet, but one of these days we'll take a ride.
We'll
have problems all over America. I'd like to drop into one little thing about juries that I've been saving up here. If you were a peasant anywhere else in the world than America, any of the other 185 countries, say you're a peasant and there's a thief and he's stealing vegetables out of your garden or something, then you'll just go and you'll tell the king that, hey, there's a thief in my yard, and the king will take care of it. And that's what they do in 185 countries. In America, and in the last 200 years, we've gotten to be the biggest country in the world. We can put a missile through your front car window if we feel like it, if you're in China or Arctic Ocean. But we've gotten to be the biggest country in the world. And we give the people who live in the country, we give the citizens the power to run this country. And everybody else is a public servant, and they do what the citizens tell them to do. Every now and then, 12 citizens meet. If somebody's stealing vegetables out of your garden, or if somebody's putting stickers on your front door and selling it at the county steps, you can talk to 12 citizens, and you can get this stopped immediately with very little excitement or emotion. It costs $350 to walk into court. And when I went to New Orleans, I didn't have the $350 with me. I got an informa pauperis form, And I said, well, I could scrape up $350. I could, you know, pretend I got a set of car tires, but I'd like to file in forma properis because this is quite inconvenient for me to pay this $350. And they said, no problem. You're an American citizen. But don't worry about the money. We don't deny justice for anybody in America, whether you have money or not. I filled out my form and said, this is a filing in forma properis. I'm asking for myself. But this is what we have in America. We have the citizens run the place, and the jury is the representative of those citizens. And I have been on juries. I enjoyed going on my juries. I've only put one person in jail out of about the 30 people that we considered. And what I found with most of my jury service, we would get called and selected from 40 or 50 people, and then there'd be 12 of us. We'd sit down in the courtroom, either 6 or 12 different people had different services. And then the judge would come out and he'd say, well, juries, I'd like to thank you for being here, but I'm going to bring you the news that the case that you were thinking of hearing has just been settled. And those people reached an agreement and you're all excused. Go have lunch. So typically 99 cases out of 100, the jury has no role because the people suddenly reach an agreement. When the jury sits there, there's something about that. They have to tell their story. And then they decide, well, you know what? Going to jail for 2 years is better than going to jail for 28 years. I'll go to jail for 2 years. Or they'll say, well, paying $100 for my front bumper is better than paying $5,000 for everybody's front bumper. I'll pay the $100. The jury can go home. But when you're talking about $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 house, I think you ought to lay your case before the jury. What I found in all my reading when I was involved with these people, that 99 cases out of 100 are won by the banks. The sheriff does eventually come and sell the house. And I guess in Austin, we have bridges down here. There's people who live under the bridges. They used to live in houses, I imagine. And the sheriff sold their house, and now they'll wash your car window or anything. The Salvation Army makes sure everybody has food. Red Cross takes care of people. But these people used to live in houses.
Yes.
So they've all had lawyers and attorneys. About a 99% effort, your lawyer is going to lose your case. And your bank
or
house in Texas.
Or get bought out. Or get paid off.
Or get bought out. Yeah, or get paid off. There's some corruption going on there.
A whole lot.
But you're going to lose. Whereas if you talk to a jury, I think if you can explain your case in front of a jury, you've got a 50% probability of your case being accepted. And if your explanation is based on what I call truth, justice, and the American way, I paid money. I'd like this house. I've paid for it. I own it. I pay taxes on it. Then I think you're more likely to win in front of a jury. And now I see that some big verdicts are being returned from juries. And when Bank of America loses $45 million out in Calaveras County somewhere, then they have to think, well, today we made $860 million and we paid $45 million. And we'll have to manage with $815 million today. But let's keep on doing what we're doing. Let's not everybody get all excited. So the thieving is a good business in America. It's not as good a business as me walking up to the cash register lady and pointing a gun at her and taking $400 or $500. That's about
right, because then you get a prison for life.
You know, it's not worth it. But if I can run a bank and have six or seven hundred accounts and get 20 or 30 free houses every day, it's a profitable business.
Right.
But anyway, power of jury before the Constitution in November 1734, A printer named John Peter Zenger was arrested for seditious libel against His Majesty's government. We were an English colony back then. We were a colony of New York. And this Peter Zenger guy said, the king is a thief. The king is taking taxes unfairly. The king takes one half of our tobacco that we grow. This is not fair. He was trying to start a revolution and printing out signs and stuff and parading them around downtown New York. And he was brought to trial. They arrested him and they brought him to trial. And even in 1734, they had juries ever since 1200 in England. So they, Peter Zenger said, well, hey, I did publish these offensive articles. The king is a thief. He was talking about King Henry VIII, you know, the son of God at the time. And he said, you know, out here in New York, he's stealing stuff. He's stealing tea and he's impressing sailors. He's got forced labor. And so the judge threw him for trial before the jury because he said, if everybody printed all this stuff and told people, whether it's true or not, it's going to cause a revolution. And a revolution is going to be bad. So the judge instructed the jury that even if this stuff that Peter Zenger was saying was true, it wasn't their obligation to say if it's true or false. It's what's against the law or not against the law. And that jury deliberated for 10 minutes and set Peter Zenger free and declared he was not guilty for printing some unpleasant truth about King Henry VIII for people to read while they were riding the bus to work and think about, well, maybe we'll just make our own country. Peter Zenger's laws bore fruit, and we did make our own country about 10 years later, and we don't have a king in America. We have a jury that makes every weighty decision. So anybody who's arguing about more than $20 can raise their hand up and say, I'd like to present my case before a jury. We're disputing more than $20. If you're disputing just a question of money, if you're in a civil dispute, you only need a preponderance of the evidence. You need to convince 7 people out of those 12 that your case is valid. Your point of view is the correct point of view, and you should not be penalized. And it's one of life's mysteries that more people don't do that. This is what I advocate, and I'm advocating it before the Supreme Court. I'm trying to squeeze my speech down into 30 minutes. And actually, I'm hoping they'll ask me some questions. Usually, that I find they ask questions. Last year, the Supreme Court considered 160 cases out of the 10,000 cases that were brought before them. They accepted, what did they accept? 800 of them they accepted for further deliberation. They actually deliberated on 160 of them. They upheld 28 of them, I think, 28 or 26, and they remanded about 80 of them. So their year's work was predominantly for the, well, I would say the citizen, the 80, that primarily they found that the lower courts made more errors than correct calls. So the circuit court and the district court, the federal courts, all of them, they make errors about 80% of the time. And the Supreme Court corrects the error, and then the case is retried or it's just judged. And sometimes people just pay the money. If it's Bank of America, they say, well, every mortgage case has so far been settled by a consent judgment. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Greenlee, GMAC, Ally, Ocwen. There's been about a dozen consent judgments. They've collected $160 billion by mutual agreement to go to the United States Treasury. And the companies have vowed not to cease their sinful and unlawful ways. So about 40% of the industry has signed a consent judgment, including Bank of America. So while they're trying to seize Casey's house and Angie's house and Latasha's house and Savannah's house, Sonia's house, Michael
and Susie's house, and the list goes on.
They vowed to go and sin no more unless they're just overwhelmed. These people are so devious, if they see a penny on the floor, they cannot resist. If it breaks their back, they'll bend down and pick it up. They have an overwhelming genetic defect. That's all I can say.
So let me ask you a question about, and this is a question that I really want to know the answer to. Are you aware of any law firms that are crooked? I want to say this the correct and the smart way, because of what's going on in my township. We pay our taxes to one accounting firm who is we pay the taxes to his accounting firm, right? And the wife owns the law firm that sues you if you don't pay your taxes. Well, today it was really odd because on three separate occasions, her law firm came up on three separate cases that I was working on just today.
Right.
And they all had one thing in common, Montgomery County. They send it with an address from San Antonio, Texas, yet you open it up, and it's from Conroe, Texas, and it's a law firm, and there's a whole lot of commonalities of connecting dots, and I'm tired of seeing this name.
It's, what I found out, I'm a pro se litigant.
Me too.
So I don't see a downside in being pro se. I'm a retired engineer. I'm used to writing stuff down. I can describe a sentence or an activity. So I've had enough background that I can write, and I can tell a story. I've only bought three houses in my lifetime.
Okay.
I've paid for two of them. I've actually paid for the third one, but we had a dispute over the last little bit of it, and I live in it now. But I've had three houses in my lifetime. I'm 66 years old now. Now, Barrett, Berg, Daffin, Frappier, Turner, and Engel, let's say, for instance, they do everything that Bank of America does in Texas. And that's probably, 20,000-30,000 houses this year, either under construction or getting to the end of their 30-year lifetime. They have 15 partners who do nothing but Bank of America business, meet with them every Monday, tell them how much money they're making. Each of those 15 lawyers has a dozen little legal paralegals to look up stuff on Google and to type stuff. Hopefully they can type. Even the paralegals now are getting to be pretty poor spellers. They're just awful at spelling, and they're even worse at constructing sentences and telling stories. But you got to have somebody to type to get those 1,200 pages typed and presentable for court. Courts, for some reason, like to deal with paper. So you're a law firm. You've got 20,000 accounts for Bank of America for this year, next year, the year after, the year before. Or you're a lawyer and you're waiting for a person like me to walk into your office, and it happens every 20 years, and I'm not going to pay you a $20,000 retainer. I'm just going to say, I just have to laugh when I think about hiring a lawyer for $20,000 to argue about a $600 bill. So that's why the lawyers primarily do work for the property owners. It's a small section of humanity But the only restraint on those lawyers is the public regulators, and that's why I act for the U.S. Attorney General. Now, there's one case that went before a jury. It was in Harris County in Houston. It was unsealed last December of 2016. It was 6 years in litigation from somebody like me who was acting as a pro se litigant.
Correct.
He was Peter Belli, and he was suing Allied Mortgage Company.
Okay.
And he was acting for the U.S. Attorney General. At that time, it was Preet Bharara. Preet Bharara finally took an interest, came down to Houston, presented the case before the jury, and he got a 90-some million dollar award, $96 million. Now, Steve Belli was dead. He died about 2 years prior to that. Yeah. Allied Home Mortgage was long since bankrupt, about 4 years prior to their award.
Of course.
They were the successor to Countrywide. Countrywide went bankrupt. Allied went bankrupt shortly thereafter, and whoever owned the shreds of Allied paid the $96 million to the U.S. Treasury. And that's
to the
only
U.S. Treasury.
To the U.S. Treasury, because Steve Belli was representing the regulatory authority, which is defined to be the U.S. Attorney General. So it was settled. After 6 years of litigation with the two principals dead and gone, that's a problem in the legal system today.
Right. So,
the complex cases take a long time to settle. If you're a peasant and you want money from a bank, you have a complex case. You're going to be in court for a long time. So enjoy it while you're there. That's what I try and do. I try to enjoy it.
You know, if I wasn't a Scorpio and just, like, you know, everything a challenge for me, like, that I enjoy, it's crazy. Yep. I can't explain myself, and my family certainly can't figure me out. But it's just like, why haven't you given up? And I'm like, given up?
I have a few highly professional lawyers in the family. They've universally advised me there's no future in fighting banks. That's all good advice. You're probably going to lose. So I don't expend a lot of money. I do expend a lot of effort. And I'm trying to push on that pendulum because I don't believe that they ought to go through life unregulated. Every now and then, somebody goes to jail. Angelo Mozzillo used to own Countrywide. He's living in jail. My one lawsuit, I'm representing the U.S. Attorney General again in Sasco. This originated with Lehman Brothers. They're bankrupt. Countrywide was doing their mortgage servicing. They're bankrupt.
Right.
Now,
that's who my
Wells
original
Fargo,
lender was.
Well, Wells Fargo has taken over the accounting, the money, but they don't really have strong guidance. But Angelo Mozzillo is sitting down there in jail in South Carolina, and he's a very valuable witness to me. And I'm going to visit down there in South Carolina, and we'll spend the afternoon or two or three or six or seven, and we're going to get the story behind Angelo Mozzillo servicing these $911 million of mortgages up in Minnesota.
$911
million that Angelo Mozzillo and Lehman Brothers stole from the United States of America on March 10th, 2007.
Wow.
When they securitized 4,089 mortgages that one morning, and they sold it to all their investors, 72 of them.
And okay, they securitized how many? Because I'm taking notes on this part.
They securitized
on March the 10th, 2007. They securitized.
On March the 10th. If you Google Dave McRae and Lehman Brothers, you'll probably see my website. It's phhmortgagemustbedestroyed.weebly.com, and it's under the tab Loot. I just called it the looting of America. This is a loot case. And I have I have about probably 500 pages in PDF files there on the substantive facts of the case. I'm ready to present the case to a jury tomorrow morning. I have a reasonable man's suspicion of the facts, and we have some reasonable pieces of paper that a jury can use to make their decisions. And naturally, if I have Angelo Mozzillo's story and have the stories of a few other people, Michael, who lives in a residence inn now, who used to live in a house, Angelo Mozzillo, who lives in jail down in South Carolina, and who knows where those other 4,089 people live. We do know that the United States gave away $911 million when Lehman Brothers went bankrupt, and it looks like Barclays and London was the beneficiary of that.
Wow.
An afternoon's work for Lehman Brothers. Some people at Taco Bell sell tacos and wait for customers to come in and buy five or six of them and maybe do $1,100 or $1,200 worth of business in a day. And some people sell securitized mortgages. They do $911 million. And then they go have lunch.
It's nothing.
Unless they get sad and they jump out the windows of their bank and they hit Wall Street. Every now and then somebody gets sad and they jump out the window and they splat on the sidewalk. And I encourage that behavior. I try and encourage that as much as I can.
You're like, oh, you feel guilty, huh? Well, let me tell you, the former director of the New York Stock Exchange, his name is C for Cecil Edward Ward, W-A-R-D. And I met Cecil Edward Ward in 2013. I was doing a global medical card where all of your medical records was on one universal card. And so I had the patent on it and had the business plan. I had everything. And I met him out in Los Angeles. And then I was going to New York City. I met him like in April or March or April in 2013. I went to New York City in May to do a walk across the Brooklyn Bridge with a foundation against domestic violence. And so he put me up at like this presidential suite in New York City. And then the very next month I went to Rome with him, and he came out here to visit with me and my father this past August, and out to Texas from Long Island, from New York and the city. So, you know, I share this with you because you talk about people just jumping out of, and, you know, it's not funny that, you know, that I'm laughing about this, but I cannot think of a more miserable person than this man. He is miserable.
And the reason that they do this, I have read the financial journals, the reason that these people jump out of windows and jump off of buildings is because they're insured as a key employee for accidental death, and their wife or girlfriend gets double the amount of money if they die in an accident. So they jump off the building.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Now that,
this is what they do. Five or six a year.
I wonder how many a year this happens
Singapore and Tokyo and maybe Moscow. Moscow is getting kind of civilized. London, New York, Singapore, Hong Kong. This is where people jump off the buildings so their wives get double the amount of money.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, that's crazy.
The day before
so
they go to jail.
Are,
they don't like to go to jail.
Right. I get that. So we have a ton of callers that are just like, you know, waiting very patiently. So I am going to take just a moment, and I am going to start calling in the telephone numbers and bringing them in live. They're going to want to ask questions. Are you okay with that, Dave?
Sure.
Awesome. So, and again, I want to reintroduce who we're talking to, Dave. Dave, tell them again your company, because we've had a lot of people jump on board since we started the show an hour ago Just tell them again, like, your name. Tell them about, you know, what you do for people. Just if you can give them, you know, the pitch of you.
I'm a pro se litigant. I encourage people to work pro se, or I serve as a resource for them. And I can't say you'll be hugely successful, but I can say that you are able to do it. So I work pro se against my company, PHH Mortgage. My website is phhmortgagemustbedestroyed.weebly.com. The name was available, so I took it. And I've concentrated on building a website with one case. I've waived all privacy for me, and I've published every court document, and I've published all my jury exhibits. And I've just exposed one case so people can look and see what a reply is and a response is and a complaint, just one case. And then I've got one little tab on the end that I'm thinking it needs to have a website of its own. But I'm also representing the U.S. Attorney General, and I'm prosecuting SASCO 2007 MLN1, a securities issue of $911 million that was issued by Lehman Brothers about 8 months before they went bankrupt, about 5 days after Mortgage Lenders Network went bankrupt, about 6 months before Countrywide went bankrupt, and about 8 months before they went bankrupt. Currently, the shreds of this case are being handled by Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and Barclays, and a couple other unindicted conspirators. So I'm prosecuting that case just for my own general entertainment. So that's it for me.
All righty. So we have, let me call in. We have somebody calling in from area code 336. 336. And any of you that are listening to Blog Talk Radio online, if you would like to be actually, if you want to ask questions or be, ask anything on the show, then I would suggest that you call in 347-855. 8301. 336, are you on?
Yeah, I want to say something to you real quick. I've been on Blog Talk Radio for ages for Austin Thomas, Truth for Moses Radio.
Oh, Austin is awesome.
Heck yeah, we're doing, guess what I just did? I typed up 19 pages of information. Dang, it took such a long time to type up all that. So a lot of stuff I was typing up. Holy cow.
Yes, there is quite a lot of
information. Where are you from?
I'm from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Guess who just messaged me? My dear, the Illuminati. I've been going at it all day, spamming their page. I've been spamming their Facebook pages. I said, I know exactly what y'all up to. Y'all planning World War III. Y'all planning Syria.
Let me get my little hat adjusted. Are you supposed to have the shiny side out on your hat or in? Which way does it work better for the rays that come out of my telephone here?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I tried it.
I was just like, whoa, wait, North Carolina. Wait, we don't talk Illuminati on this show. All right, we have calling in from 8, area code 850. 850, are you there? Hello?
Hello?
850?
Casey.
Yes.
This is Susan Richardson. I have strep throat, so I'm just listening. I can't talk.
Oh, Susan, it is great.
Hi, Susan.
I'm sorry that you're sick.
Hi, Dave. But I really can't because I'm really in pitiable shape today. But I'm listening.
I can't wait to talk to you. Let's definitely connect, you know, over the whenever you get your voice back. Let's definitely connect, okay?
Yes.
All right, Susan, thank you for calling in. Tell me where you're located again, Susan.
I'm in Florida.
You're in
Florida.
Okay.
Yeah.
Florida. So we've got North Carolina, which 336 North Carolina. Thanks for calling in. We've got Dave, who we're actually interviewing. He's in Austin or near Austin, Texas. Susan, thank you so much, and it's great to hear your voice, even though you do have apologize that you're sick.
It doesn't sound like me at all.
Thank you for calling in from Florida.
Yeah.
I know you and I have a lot to discuss. Yes, absolutely. And then we have our 909 calling in. 909, are you on?
Yeah, I'm sitting here listening. I'm enjoying the call.
There you are. So we've got Mr. Ronald O'Donnell on the phone, and he messaged me, and he is like, "Who is this smart guy talking?" So Ronald, meet Dave. Dave, meet Ronald.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hello, Ronald. I'm not that smart. I read a lot.
Well, you're doing a great job. I'm telling you. I'm sitting here. My question was to her. You know, I was PMing her, and I said, "Is this guy an attorney? You sound really, really, educated in these legal matters." And I'm just,
some attorneys impressed. In my family. I've made my living as an engineer. Started out ironworking and engineering. I've built buildings and stadiums and drilled oil from the bottom of the ocean. And over my lifetime, it takes 2 or 3 years to build something. It's going to take about 10 years to litigate that thing that we just built. And I've spent a lot of my time being deposed and deposing other people to see what contracts used to say. So I guess I had a little bit of a advantage.
Firsthand
when I started dealing with lawyers. I try to act dumb when I'm in a room full of lawyers, which is not hard.
I don't blame you.
I think we all agree on that.
My question then, Dave, is it Dave?
Dave.
Okay, Dave. There's so much to go over, but I want to go right to the point here. As an engineer, you understand if a part's broken, where's the part? Let's fix it and get it moving, right? Get the machine back up again.
Build on a sound foundation. The first block, the second block. That's what I try and
do. And then you
legal.
Go from there. And what I've been looking at for the last 10 years, and I have a doctorate degree in law from 1978, just so you know, and I taught real estate law. I have a lifetime teaching credential from the state of California Department of Education to teach real estate law, and I've taught that in college level for, during the 80s. And this topic that we're talking about wasn't prevalent then, of course. Unless you go back and look at the failure of the savings and loans, and that's when I got involved in it by FIREA, which was the Financial Institution Real Estate and Recovery Act, FIREA, which still applies today, believe it or not.
It still applies today. That's the foundation of my case that is before the Supreme Court.
And it's amazing how many attorneys miss that. Incredible,
That's foundational belief.
Exactly.
Yeah,
well, actually, it's the law, which is
it's
helpful.
It's a foundational law.
Yeah, to apply it. And especially when you're, in a court case. But my question is, because it seems like you've nailed everything on the head. What I've been looking at for 10 years is, the successful cases are cases where the plaintiff, the homeowner, let's go that route, alleges fraud in the complaint.
Right.
Not misrepresentation, not mistake, or all these other, issues. But they go right and hit the nail on the head, which they say, "Hey, Your Honor, there wouldn't be a case today here in front of you if we remove these fraudulent forged documents from the record."
Right.
They have no case. They have no standing.
They have no standing.
they have nothing to be here.
The successful cases are they have no standing.
Well, yeah, but watch. But no standing because why?
Because
the documents that they're counting on to make their case, well, they call them robo-signed, and I call them forged. In California here, where I'm at, it's, you know, a criminal code section 115, forged documents. Or you go to jail for that here.
Right.
Well, we don't allege it in our complaints. The attorneys here especially don't. And my question is, why do you think attorneys don't want to go direct to the point, just like an engineer would?
That's what I've been unable to come to grips with, that single fact, too. Because I, like an engineer did when I started fighting with my mortgage company, when I realized we had to go to court, I read the successful cases and the unsuccessful. The
mm-hmm.
successful cases are based on fraud.
Right.
And those are the ones that the jury awards something. All of the consent judgments are based on fraud. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau bases its whole energy on fraud. So even though they don't enforce it, that is the base. And then I've made the second jump and said, well, you can argue about who signed the document. These nine-year-old dead people signing documents in Dallas. Judges will either grant the motion for summary judgment 99% of the time, and just arbitrarily because it's one of their friends. You're fighting the old boys club. And the only way to address that is to present your case to the jury and then show the document to the jury, show the six documents to the jury, and say, do you think this person signed her name six different ways, his or her name?
Linda
is
Green, you're talking
vice
about,
vice president
right?
in Minneapolis? Is she a vice president in New York? Is she a vice president in
all over the country?
Florida?
Yeah.
But one mode of attack is to attack all the little building blocks, all the little documents. What I am advocating and what I've tried to do is just show it to the jury. The jury can determine facts and issues. So if I get before my jury, if we get remanded, the first day we'll show them 99 homes, and then we'll show them The Big Short, how to make money in bulk, and then we'll show them Inside Job, the government officials who participate in this. And then I'd like to take my jury up on a plane to Detroit. I've worked up there in the steel mills. And
I'm
I can
Pittsburgh.
Land at Detroit City Airport. And
I'm
I can
from Pittsburgh, and all my people
here.
Are steel workers.
And all your, I started out iron working in Cleveland, Ohio, and I've been in Pittsburgh in every mill that they got.
Ron Paul's from Pittsburgh, too, by the way. So is Nancy
Ron
Pelosi.
Paul's from Pittsburgh. Yep.
Yep. Nancy Pelosi. Well, they don't know that either. Yeah.
The
Democrats and the Republicans.
But I spent
Pittsburgh.
Most of my life in the Midwest. Building
Me
mills,
too.
I'll take my jury for a walk down 8 years of lunar wasteland in Detroit. They'll give you a house if you promise to hook up electricity to it and pay taxes, because they've repossessed every house for 8 miles for
yep.
lack of taxes. There's no kitchen appliances. There's no heaters, no air conditioners, no doors, no windows, but they'll give you a house if you promise to live there for 2 years. This real estate scam has done wonders for Detroit, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. It's
mm-hmm.
Vaporized communities.
The Rust Belt.
Yeah.
That's all my
Which
people.
Is why I live down here in Texas Hill Country.
Okay.
When it comes right down to it, the last little mill that I was a direct employee of in Sterling, Illinois, a U.S. steel mill, I left that place in 2001. They're shuttered today.
Do you know who owns U.S. Steel?
It's the steel stockholders, isn't it?
Yeah, but the major stockholders, J.P. Morgan Chase. I didn't know that.
J.P. Right.
Yeah.
I was
J.P.
with L.P.
Morgan himself.
It was Mellon Bank.
J.P. Morgan. Well, Mellon Bank's from Pittsburgh. You know that. But
yep.
they manage it. J.P. Morgan bought Carnegie Steel from Andrew Carnegie personally and said, you are now the wealthiest man in the world.
Wow.
And Carnegie went back to Scotland, and he was, you know, he retired out there during the strike. And then they changed the name from Carnegie Steel, you know, the Carnegie Foundation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And called it U.S. Steel.
Well,
I'm
a Scottish immigrant back in my family, and we came over to work for Carnegie to be a millwright. That was secret knowledge back then.
Yep. And you know what I'm trying to tell you is J.P. Morgan Chase Bank is bigger and more involved in every one of these foreclosures than anyone ever thought.
Yep.
And, you know, they're behind all of this. All of it. You know, and I mean all of it. I have a website called chasebankcrimes.com, which hits the nail on the head. And I'd like you guys just to take a quick look at it. It's about 2 pages.
I'll take a look. Chasebankcrimes.com.
Yeah, it's where they're making their money on that site. It just says 1099-C. In other words,
well,
whatever happens
like
at the end of this,
estate.
Dave, when it's all over, they get a tax write-off from their income taxes for the profits that they make. So whenever,
sure.
you know, you lose your home and the estimated value, say it was $100,000, I'm using a round number, and then they sell it for $50,000 to one of their friends, that $50,000 difference goes to your personal income tax on a 1099-C,
right.
And they find it uncollectible, and they get a refund from the IRS. Talk about
right.
the homeowner being, you know, coming and going, getting screwed all the way around, you know.
Right.
So, but, you know, I don't know where this call is going, but as far as I'm concerned, you're doing a great job, you know, and I don't mean to ramble, but it just seems that I feel a connection between you and I because of our backgrounds. I'm 65. How old are you?
I'm 66.
All right. Okay. So
I'm a retired steel mill engineer, so I've got time on my hands. This
yeah,
is
well,
what
I have time too. I'm 65,
I
and I just had eye surgery.
Type on my legal documents.
Well, go on my site,
foreclosureofammunition.com,
and I have 12 videos there that you can get for free, and it'll tell you who
Good.
I am.
Good.
I've been doing I'll this 10 me. Years, and it's because they tried to take my house. And I said, they're not taking my house.
I found that's the only reason I'm here. They have a missionary experience where they encountered one of these people and they decided that they were not going to tolerate this thieving behavior.
Well, that was 10 years ago. I'm still in my house.
Yeah.
So
I'm
is
still
my,
in my
daughter.
House.
And, you know, I mean, you know, I could have just walked away.
Nightmare.
Well, it is a nightmare.
The people who used to own my house, they have decided to get out of the mortgage business. They put out in their annual report this year that they plan to be out of the mortgage business by August.
Just for PHA that, who is
Corporation.
It? What is it?
They used to be known as Avis Car Rental, PHH Corporation, a public corporation. They're based in New Jersey, but they're unloading $94 billion is their mortgage portfolio. They're unloading it one third at a time, and they plan to be out of the mortgage business. Because
oh, wow. Hey, while we're on the phone, guess what I found out?
Overhead.
Dave, guess what I found out?
What?
You know, a lot of these mortgages back in 2007 were started by option one and option two and option three.
Right.
Okay. I don't know if you're in option one, but I think Casey Tuckness is. She's either a one or a two or three, option one, two, or three. Well, that was owned by H&R Block.
Oh,
and
really?
What they did is they had your income tax returns right there, and they would send you, the loan offer, 125% above, appraised value.
For their business.
That was H&R Block sending you those loans, and they wrote you up.
Yep.
Wow, huh?
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm just like, wow.
You gave them your income tax information. They had it on their computer, and they went ahead and just turned around and gave you a loan. But they called it option one. I mean, I've been looking at this for 10 years.
Yeah.
I didn't know
I've
about
it. I've been doing it 9 years. plug it.
Well, watch it.
I didn't know about Avis until
this call.
Wow, I didn't either. I had no idea that Avis was in the mortgage industry other than the car rental.
I didn't either.
That's
did
crazy.
You know H&R Block did your loan more than likely across the country?
No.
No, I didn't.
No, I think it's countrywide. It could be H&R.
H&R Block, let me tell you, before Countrywide, there was these little mortgage companies that would come in and talk to you first. You know,
yes.
It didn't go straight to Countrywide.
I was Countrywide.
Well, you weren't contacted directly by Countrywide. These little companies, like a little mortgage independent
mortgage
broker.
Mortgage lenders networked like an
affiliate. Right.
Like
right.
And
yeah. Then they flipped you. They flipped you to Countrywide.
City? Yeah. Each person to take
you.
A cut. Each person to take a cut, they'd go away never to be heard from again.
Thank you. That's my point.
The securitization business is built on sand, and it's in the process of collapsing. It's in the process of collapsing because of multi-billion-dollar judgments.
Well, can I just say something, Dave? This phone call, this conversation here, there's another little thing that I found out that just blew me away, and I just want to say it to everybody in the country that gets a chance to hear this. When I, you know, started looking into this deeper and deeper and deeper, as I went through, I guess, I don't like to use that term, the rabbit hole, but that's what we're talking about.
Right.
When we get right down to the very bottom of this, it's all about debt slavery and buying and selling slaves. When you really look at this, you know, and I went and, you know, I'm kind of like
yeah,
a historical
I agree.
Buff. I mean it, and that's why we're not getting any relief from, you know, the government or anything like that, because we are considered, well, what's the word subprime mean? When you look at the choice of the language they used, subprime, we're not even prime.
We're a more profitable plantation slave because we'll go to work and feed ourselves.
Well, worse than that, I mean really actually. I don't mean like theoretically. I mean, in other words, we have a society here that if you borrow money, then you are the slave, and if you lent the money, you are the master. You know, and I'm, with my background in law for 40 years now, it's just, really become more and more and more apparent. I remember when we were in law school, we used to read these cases, case law, back in the 70s. And any lawyer out there will go ahead and admit this. But in Black's Law, I mean, you know, in the traditional real property, you know, instructional booklets that we had to read the cases out of, there was always a reference to Black Acre and White Acre. And anybody that ever went to law school back in the 60s and 70s knows exactly what I'm talking about. But they never mentioned, it never connected to me what they meant by Black Acre and White Acre. And the rules, depending, and they would cite cases, depending on if it was in White Acre or if it was in Black Acre. And I never connected that when I was in law school. It just didn't occur to me. I didn't know why they used that kind of language. But what they were silently saying to anyone that was aware at the time, which I was not, it was, hey, there's different rules for different classes of society. If
there's
we're talking about a property in White Acre, you're going to get this result. The same facts in Black Acre, you're getting another result.
Yep.
So there's something that the jury needs to hear. We're actually still today in 2017 dealing with what is now called slavery. You're the servant. Wait a minute. That's what a landlord is. He's the lord, and you are the servant. Landlord needs a land servant. They need a fiefdom.
Well, Dave,
now when we go to court, they recognize you as White Acre or Black Acre, whether you like it or not.
The judges make that deception. But
now, they know. They know what I know.
Yeah,
they know better than I know because I missed it. They didn't.
So,
that's why they're on the Supreme Court. That's why they have the good jobs.
We've only got like 5 minutes left of this show, and I would like to kind of finalize it. First of all, we've got one more caller calling in from 201. Caller from 201, area code 201. Are you on?
Yes, I am on. I actually was just listening because I came in the show later.
Okay.
I am very interested in the topic, so I definitely want to get, you know, the information so I could go back and listen to the archives. I'm actually dealing with a situation now where a private investor paid a property tax lien on a home that was part of an estate, and I'm trying to see if I could get information of who this private bank was, or, you know, and try to find the right way how to satisfy the lien without being pulled further down this rabbit hole. I believe that a lot of things were systemically done to keep us in the dark. I mean, missing numbers on documents, numbers not being properly filed in the county office. So, you know, I got a lot to learn in a short period of time so that I could actually protect and keep the home. And
absolutely. Where are you calling from? May I ask where you're calling from?
I'm calling from New Jersey. And
You're calling from New Jersey. Okay.
Yes. And they've been doing a very savvy thing in terms of when they actually increase the assessment. They'll increase the assessment and the taxes, and then they'll lower the assessment and increase the taxes, and then they'll increase the assessment. So it's like this big roller coaster ride. Meanwhile, you're seeing assessments just balloon, and people are just buying up these liens, and I think it's deliberately being done. And there's no recourse that I could see from, you know, from the court system, because even the attorneys don't like, they can't give you any answers. All
right.
They want you to do is sell. And to me, I'm like, I don't need you to tell me to sell if I want to keep something. I need you to advise me on the lawful way to handle this situation, because if someone is just moving paper around, how could they just take your home? Especially
right.
If
how long have you been in your house?
This home actually was my mother's house, and she had the house going on 40 years.
40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to this is just, it's unbelievable. The stories that I
mm-hmm.
hear daily, it's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, 40 years. I tell you what, if you want to reach out to me, if you'll go and like Connecting the Dots with KC Tuckness, it's K.C.Tuckness, or if we're already connected on Facebook, please reach out to me. We've got 90 seconds left of the show. Please reach out. It's K.C.Tuckness. Reach out to me, and then I will connect the dots for you to get with the appropriate people to help you. And there's a lot of timeline questions I would personally like to ask you so you and I could talk, you know. I've got a really packed weekend, so if we could talk maybe Monday, that would be great.
You say K.C.Tuckness? How do you spell that?
K-N-E-S-S. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, you're on Facebook.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I'm everywhere. Facebook, LinkedIn, everywhere. We've only got 60 seconds left of the show.
Okay.
I wanted to say that, and I appreciate everybody calling in. I mean, we have people from North Carolina. We've got Austin, Texas. We've got Conroe, Texas. We've got the Woodlands, Texas. We've got California. We've got New Jersey. We've got Florida. We've got people from all over. We've got a lot of people online or, you know, listening to the show tonight. Ronald O'Donnell, first of all, I want you to tell them real quick what you are running for, because you announced it on my show last week. So promote that really quick.
Oh, okay. I was invited April 20th. I'm running for United States Congress from Southern California, and I intend to take this to Washington, D.C. And on April the 20th, there will be national TV news and everything. I'm speaking in front of the Los Angeles County Democratic Party. As a candidate for the vice chair of the party, in addition to running for United States Congress, and we are we're making an impact. We're making waves. And
yeah.
I want your support, all you people out there. I had never run for anything in my life until this started. And I wished I had earlier, you know, but I'm an old man now and I have plenty of time to go ahead and get out there and go ahead and let the people know we have been, 26 million people have been foreclosed on. The Democratic Party didn't say a word. The Republican Party didn't say a word. And I am saying a word. I'm going to let everyone know about the fraud.
Thank you. Because that's what matters. And Dave, I am going to give Ronald your information because I'm going to connect, you know, the two of you together.
Ronald, I'm on your contact page. I'm sending you a contact right now.
Fantastic.
Oh, you are sending me one, Dave?
I'm on your contact page right now on chasebankcrimes.com.
Okay, well, you know what? Let me just tell you, the best PM me on Facebook right now.
Okay.
Ronald J. O'Donnell, I'm right there on Facebook. And if you PM me or make a friend request, then I will follow up with you, and I can just go on my computer and send you, you know, very email. I'll just give me your email address, and I'll send you the latest updates that I have.
Good.
I have, and we're going to talk about the Sunquist case.
Yep.
The $24 million Sunquist case that came out of Eastern California District, which is not where you mentioned. It's in my district here in California State Senate District 23.
Up in Sacramento.
In Riverside. Yeah, that's us. That's where the $24 million came from. So I'm very familiar with it. The court opinion is 107 pages. Just the opinion.
I downloaded it the day they published it.
Well, I have it, and I've read it. And there are 263 docket filings that are in there, which I have not read. I just got it 2 days ago myself, or 3 days ago. But, you know, I've got other things I'm doing. I had eye surgery, blah, blah, blah. You don't want to hear that. But I want to say something, Dave, at 65. I went from blind in the left eye to 20/30 vision this week in that eye.
Wow, that's awesome.
Thankful to God. I'm able to see again. So I got to be doing something right. God has blessed me this week.
Amen.
Outstanding.
That's awesome.
And I mean that.
Amen, absolutely. And I am so blessed and so grateful that Ronald O'Donnell and that you, Dave, were, you know, that y'all allowed us to talk to you and share your knowledge. And I'm very grateful that y'all are going to be my expert witnesses if I do have to go to
trial.
Oh,
I'll be there. I'll be there with bells and whistles on for you guys. You know what I mean?
And Dave, you will
you
too.
Know, we're not done here. We're not done. We're just starting. And you know what? I have, to me, that was a message from God.
Right.
He gave me back my vision. He wants me to do something with it.
That's right.
Or
That's
else I wouldn't
right.
have it. And Dave, I don't know if you believe in God or the listeners do.
I am on a mission from God. Since
that, now I'm starting to believe that he wants me around for a while.
Here.
I believe that I got to do this.
God gives me these opportunities every day. All I do is work.
Me too, every day. But let's stay in touch, and I think we need to rally around KC Tuckness. Because
you got a friend request.
She's really, really been the motivation for me in the last month or two. You know, when
I got tired
and I was worn out, and honest to God, Dave, I was ready to throw it all away and say, after 10 years, I'm done. About two things came into my life. I could see again out of my left eye, and I found KC Tuckness.
Aww,
and motivated me when I was ready to say to hell with it.
Well, we can't. We are on a mission from God,
quit.
And he needs us to do his work.
That's exactly right, Dave. And I'm asking you to help out, too. And just
that's what I do.
Oh, absolutely. I've got a very
wonderful.
Powerful team, so I appreciate all of y'all. I'm so sorry that the show, because it's ending. So thank you, everybody. We'll talk to y'all again next Friday night.
Okay.
And all of us will stay in touch very soon. Okay. Thanks again, everybody, for joining in to Connecting the Dots with KC Tuckness. Thank you, and have a magical evening and a great weekend. Good night.
No.